Canucks Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. The Vancouver Canucks finishing up their final back-to-back set of the season, and the march to the end continues, as with just five games remaining on the schedule, the Canucks are not quite yet with the E next to their name in the standing set, but it is very, very close to getting there. Could happen as early as tomorrow against the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen.
And, yes.
I think the death march isn't officially on, and maybe it's not much of a march considering it'll be like, what, five games?
Yeah.
Or four games or whatever it is. So it's not like this long journey or marathon to the end of the season. But the season's ending in, what, 9 days?
Yeah, nine days.
Less than 9 days. So it's going to come pretty quick here. And as much as it's not as interesting watching the team right now, we're not that far away from not having Canucks hockey, and then we will be bemoaning the fact that they're not in the playoffs when we see all the other Canadian teams essentially in the postseason.
At that point, we'll be power ranking which Canadian team you're cheering for. That's who is Canada's team? This 2025 version.
I hate that we're back to having those discussions again. The draft and which Canadian team are you cheering for this year?
Yeah, well, we'll have more time to prep draft for this year and get into watching tape of some of the potential candidates for the Canucks to select in the top 15 or wherever it is they end up landing in this year's NHL entry draft. But it was a reality last night with the way that Vegas turned up the heat as that game went on, just how far away this club currently is from the top of the Western Conference, and how fleeting that feeling can be, because it was just a year ago that it's like, hey, you are top of the Western Conference, you are top of the Pacific Division, and now they are very far away. We're going to get into a lot today. Joe Beninati is going to join us. Capitals play-by-play was there for goal number one and called goal number 895 for Alex Ovechkin, and Don Taylor will join us later as well. But it was pretty special seeing the whole Ovi celebration. It's kind of funny, like, the Islanders end up winning, but, you know, the game has to come to a complete halt. It's like the Islanders is just sitting there like, you know, this game does have a lot of playoff implications for us. You know that?
Well, it's kind of like the same thing that happened in 94.
Right, yeah.
When Gretzky broke the record, the Canucks were in a battle for a playoff spot, and, you know, the LA Kings, one of the top teams. And here's, yeah, watch history be made and sit here and watch for like 20 minutes before you get a chance to go out there and play again, right? But it's one of those things. I was kind of joking, because sometimes when we're doing post game, if a game runs long, it runs at the post game. So I was like, man, it's going to be a short post game show for whoever's doing the post game show.
Yeah.
For the Washington Capitals, because of how long that delay was. But I think when you look at what he accomplished, you could have taken an hour off, and I was just sitting there in awe of the whole thing, and it was incredible to watch.
It was, and seeing how the whole sports world reacted, it kind of it puts into perspective just how big of an accomplishment it is. The same as, I was going to say the same as Barry Bonds chasing down Hank Aaron, but that was clouded under Bonds's use of PEDs, so yeah. It's not quite the same, because that one was tainted a little bit. This one, you know, it's there is, you know, some people that have their questions about it and how they feel about it given the political climate we currently live in, but at the same time, still pretty incredible from an athletic achievement from Alex Ovechkin.
It's hockey history, whether you like it or not. And history doesn't always mean good. It can also mean bad. It all depends on how you view history, right? But at the end of the day, he broke a record that I don't think any of us thought was possible to be broken, what, 6 years ago, 7 years ago,
yeah,
8 years ago?
I mean, he was asked about it in 2016, and it was never going to happen. It's impossible.
Yeah.
And he made the impossible possible, given how long he's kept it up and continued to score at an incredibly high rate. We'll dive more into this with Joe Beninati coming up after 4:30. But let's dive into your Vancouver Canucks. It's the open on Canuck Central.
Welcome to the Open.
Fuck! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
It's the Open on Canucks Central, where we bring the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. The latest being that the Canucks are traveling to Dallas, where they will play the Stars tomorrow night. That, of course, the site in which JT Miller was traded on January 31st. He was preparing to play that night against the Stars, and it never ended up happening because he was moved on to the New York Rangers. Later that evening, the Canucks saw Quinn Hughes suffer an injury and also then traded for Marcus Pettersson. So it was quite the day on the calendar the last time the Canucks visited Dallas. This time, it's promising to be a little bit less impactful given where the Canucks currently sit in the standings. But we did see a return yesterday to the lineup from one Nils Höglander. And you know, he scores the opening goal of the game, plays alongside Pew Suter and Brock Besser, the Canucks' de facto top line with all the injuries they are currently playing through, and of course the aforementioned trade of JT Miller earlier this season. And realistically, not that this is a high bar to reach, but given where Höglander's season started and where it has come over the last couple of months, it's not the craziest thing to say that he's been the Canucks' best forward or most consistent forward. Maybe you put Pew Suter in that conversation over the last couple of months, but Höglander's numbers speak for themselves. I know you look at the box score, oh, he's only got 7 goals for the year, but since January 1st, the Canucks have outscored their opponents 3-1, 21-7 in total with Nils Höglander on the ice over the 33 games he's played in since the calendar turned to 2025. It's been a remarkable turnaround for him in the second half of the season.
He's looking like the player he was last season when he had the breakout year in the regular season, and the struggles happen in the playoffs, and ultimately, you know, there are things that he still has to prove, even if he does have a consistent regular season next year. And that's just, you know, the step-by-step process you go into becoming a more of an impactful player if you are moving up the charts instead of just kind of being a guy that's playing on the third or fourth line. And we honestly, like, I was expecting this to happen at some point. I think Höglander has proven to us what he is capable of doing. He's also proven to us that he is inconsistent. And the question is, can he find that consistency? He is still young enough, and he does things so remarkably, he does so many things remarkably well, and he has that attitude, right? That he can be a pest. He can be a dog on a bone. And Murph was mentioning, was talking to him earlier this week, and how he was talking about how he needs to be that guy that gets under the opponent's skin consistently. He needs to embrace being that type of player. And we know that when he's at his best, he's the type of player that the other team is going after trying to kill the entire game. And that's what he needs to kind of forge on a consistent basis. And if he can do those things, he could be a very effective player.
Exactly. And we've seen a lot more of it lately, the way that he can just be a pest, especially on the forecheck, and really annoy the opposition, always disrupting their breakouts and doing those kinds of things. Those are things that Hoggy does really well. And you know, it was interesting hearing Rick Tocchet speak about Höglander over the last couple of days, just because he's been so positive about Höglander. Why wouldn't you be, given the numbers that we mentioned? The team is wildly outscoring their opponents when Höglander's been on the ice over the last few months. But to hear him say it publicly, as Tocchet hasn't always been Höglander's biggest public supporter. Here's a little snippet of what he had to say about Höglander's game last night.
He's got himself, he's been working on a position to get a puck. You know, I think a lot of guys can learn from Hoggy. You know, you got to move your feet and know the puck's going to come to you before it's coming. I think that's where Hoggy's really improved. At the beginning of the year, I thought he wasn't seeing that. Now he's seeing it. He's coming back with speed. He's taking the puck in the middle. He's trying to make a play. A lot of time he gets in trouble is when he doesn't have any pace and he tries to make a play. That's the only time he has in trouble. But for the most part, he's one of the guys that's really trying to get some speed to the neutral zone.
It's I love Tocchet because he's always honest about his assessment of players, or he can be very honest. So, like, even while dishing out some praise, he still mentioned some things that he wants Höglander to work on. But he kind of uses Höglander to send a message out to other forwards on this roster. A lot of guys can learn from Höglander. You got to move your feet and know where the puck is coming to you before it's coming. And I think this is more a shot, not so much at, you know, the Linus Carlsons and those types that are on the Canucks roster right now. I think, you know, that's something Jake DeBrusque has really struggled with lately, as he's kind of not played well over the last little while. So to hear not only Rick Tocchet praising Höglander, but using him as an example for others to aspire to, I mean, he's come out of the doghouse and is now somebody that Rick Tocchet is using as, you know, a template for other guys to work towards.
Yeah, and it's something that, you know, I kind of had the same reaction you had. Like, I kind of snickered when I heard it in a good way, because I'm like, I can't believe he's saying these things about Höglander, and who is he trying to send a message to? And I think DeBrusque's not a bad one to bring up with his game and where that's at. And if you take out the Rangers game, because he was injured early on in that game and left and didn't return, he only played 7 minutes. His last three games, take that out. He played 16:20 against Vegas. He played 16:57 in the overtime game against the Blues, and played 15:39 against Winnipeg. So Tocchet was giving him the increased ice time before the injury, and last night he got the same type of role, and he was happy with his performance. And ultimately with him, it's going to come down to that consistency, right, Reach? And do you think he's still young enough to figure that out, or is he going to be a player? And we see a lot of these guys, right? And we've seen examples of it. And I'm not saying he's Daniel Sprong, but they're different players, but a guy that's clearly talented, can clearly produce and do a lot of things really well. But if you can't gain the trust of a coach consistently, if you can't do things consistently on the basis that's needed to be on a winning hockey team, you're not going to be in the league in a meaningful way. And can Höglander move above that? Now, he's got a great contract he signed for 3 years, right? And hopefully he can, but that to me is going to be the question. Can this be the consistent version of Höglander?
He's still going to be just 25 in December during next season. So, and it's still such a young player. You've got him locked up for essentially his prime years, and hopefully 3 years that he exceeds the number that he has been signed for. But the issue and what this consistency thing leads to is the reason why he's not a staple in your top six and is more a guy that's kind of top nine, if you're going to say that kind of a thing. He played a lot on the fourth line earlier this year when he was really going through the doghouse. So until he finds that, or if he's able to maintain this level of play, then yeah, he's probably going to be a guy that moves up and down the lineup depending on where his game is at and how he is currently going. But you know, there is a pathway to him being used in a similar way as often and as much usage-wise as a Jake DeBrusque. We've seen him score at a pretty good rate just last year, and you're seeing the numbers start to back it up from an underlying perspective on how well Höglander has played. I think all of these things lead me to view it as, I understand Höglander's flaws, but I feel like this team is in a spot where it's got to take upside plays. And to me, Höglander is an upside play, and they can't afford to lose out on that, because, you know, they need to take some bets, some risks this off season that are going to have to hit next year. And I think Höglander can be one of those.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the value is trade-wise anyways, and I'm not sure it's compelling enough. And to your point, it's kind of like the same thing with Pettersson. The upside play is probably to keep the player and see if they find their game. Yeah. That's the highest upside bet on both Nils Höglander and both Elias Pettersson. Now, at some point, an organization loses faith and wants to move on, or thinks that they can do other things with that money and whatever assets they get back into return. And that's, to me, going to be one of the big things to watch this offseason, right? Because, as we've mentioned, outside of Quinn Hughes, everybody could be available to some extent, depending on the situation, right? And what happens here with players like that. But I think Höglander, and I see people texting in and saying, you know, talking to the guy who killed his confidence earlier in the season. And listen, I'm not going to get into the debate about Rick Tocchet and what people feel about him and whether he's doing a good job or not, or whether it's justified with Nils Höglander. We are at every single home game. And Reach, how often have we sat there, watched Höglander from our view, which is center ice from atop where you watch the entire play unfold,
yeah,
and you just see him away from the puck, and you see him even on the puck and make the types of mistakes and not being the spots he needs to be that any coach in the NHL would lose their minds over.
Yep.
And that's what's been infuriating about Nils Höglander, is because you know what he can do, but then for some reason he just switches off or just doesn't do it consistently. And every single coach he's had in the NHL, we saw it with Travis, we saw it with Boudreaux too, has lost trust in him at various points because of those things. And those things were actually very evident to our eyes, even. They're watching every single game. So there has been a turnaround. I don't care who you want to attribute that to, but he's not the same player he was earlier this season.
It's been a really nice turnaround for Nils Höglander, and you know, maybe solidifying his place on the roster with the way that he has played over the last little while. Now, all that being said, and yesterday was a nice return for Nils Höglander, but this has been going on longer than just last night and longer than this recent spell where the Canucks have really fallen out of playoff contention and are in that spot where they are playing I don't like saying meaningless games, but stakeless games. How about that? Can we call them stakeless games?
Yeah, they are. And, you know, somebody texted and said, come on, Sat. Like, you know, it's been 10 games of a death march. And I don't agree with that. Like, when Höglander and Pettersson got hurt, our reaction was we both said they're cooked. Like, they're done. But they weren't done because they were still in the race. And the team wasn't acting like they were done, right? This has been the moment these past couple games, and especially now that they're going to be eliminated, like they've actually entered the death march. And it's been like six games that they've been there, right? Like that's the point about where they've now find themselves. And now in this death march, I'm not sure anything really matters, dude. you know, like it's good that guys get experience. I think, again, Höglander comes back, plays well. I think for a guy like Joshua, get his reps in, the young guys get the experience, play some minutes or whatever. But none of it's going to tell us anything about next season.
Yeah. There is value, but I would be careful. Even if, let's say, Aturatu scores another five goals in the remaining five games, it's like, great, but at the same time, you know, I was there for the game on Saturday against the Anaheim Ducks. I know how soft the Ducks were defending. That game had a lower compete level than you would if playoff spots were on the line.
Precisely.
Coming up over the next couple of weeks.
You're so right, and I think the performances we saw for some of these guys in some of those higher stake games, even five games ago, right, were a lot more indicative and meaningful than anything that's going to happen from this point on, right? And I think, you know, for all the talk about giving guys experience, and again, it's better for them to play these games because the pace is NHL, and it's better for them to gauge and understand what they need to do and learn, right? Like all that stuff is important, but I don't think it's they're not going to take the steps they need to take to get better in these five games now, especially when the stakes have, you know, really dropped significantly. How often have we seen guys come in at this point in the season, play well, do something interesting, look intriguing, and then do nothing the following season?
Yeah.
Right? And even guys that are a little bit older, like Brendan Leipzig, like look at guys at the end of the season that have come in and played really well, been exciting, played well in meaningless games. And then when the page turns into next season, they're nowhere near the level that's necessary. And you know, it's going to come down to how these guys behave in the off season and what they do in training camp. And, you know, we've entered now the point of the season has been lost, and it really sucks that we're here, but that's just the reality of it.
And, you know, I know people wanted and would say, well, just play Lekkomäki every game. And what harm would that do? Why is he a healthy when these games don't have standings on the line, don't have playoff positions on the line? So Lekkomäki being a healthy scratch, I get why, you know, there is some fans upset about that decision yesterday with Höglander coming back into the lineup. And I get it, but to me, I wouldn't want the coaching staff to change the way they feel is best to development for Jonathan Lekkomäki. And if they don't deem him to be worthy of one of those 12 forward spots with the way that he's played lately, then he shouldn't be gifted that roster spot because he's an 11th overall pick or 15th overall pick from a couple of years ago. That's something you have to work for. You've got to be better than Linus Karlsson. You've got to be better than whomever is taking that roster spot from you. And if you look at outside of the Devils game, when has Lekker-Mäki shown that he's earned that? And I don't think he's done that often enough. So I'm okay with him having to sit one in the press box with the way that things are currently going.
I think Lekker-Mäki has shown us what he's capable of, and I think a lot of it has been very promising. I think he's flashed the smarts, the ability, the skill, the shot, the things that are very exciting about what he can become with time, whether it's next year or 1 or 2 years down the road or wherever. Like, he's showing he's going to be an NHL player and he's going to score. Is he going to be a guy who's going to score 15 to 20 a year, or is he going to be a guy who's going to be able to score higher up the lineup consistently? That's going to be what he has to kind of prove here over time. But a lot to like about his game. But you're right. I don't think he's capable because he's still a young player. He still needs to get faster, needs to get stronger to consistently perform at a high level at the NHL right now. I don't think he's capable of doing so. And I think that's why his minutes have been managed. And I think that's why he's been in and out of the lineup, even before these games that happened. And the only thing you control at this point on is development. And you can give them free ice time, but what does that accomplish? Honestly, like, you can look at it and say, well, it shows guys confidence, but you either have standards or you don't. And I think you have to try to live by those things as consistently and as long as possible during the course of a season. And I think that's the most beneficial thing for a player's development anyways, as long as you're doing it in the right way. And from everything we've heard, the way they approach the prospects and these young guys is with a very hands-on, communicative way, and the players are oftentimes on board. How often do we hear, even you talk to Hoglander, he praises the coaching staff about how they handle things. Like, they're tough on the guys, sure, in terms of ice time, but they truly work with these guys to get the best out of them. And I see no reason to truly doubt the development yet. Maybe some more time shows they haven't been good at it. But with Lekker-Mäki, he's going to be a player down the road, and whether he plays 15, 16 minutes or plays 3 out of the next 5 games or 4 or 5 games, that's not going to change that fact one way or another.
It's a tough spot because, you know, I think there's nothing really Lekker-Mäki can do right now to help himself so much in the situation, because I think what he needs is an off season of building, an off season in the gym, an off season where he gets faster and he gets stronger. And that's ultimately what's going to help him take the next step and have more success to showcase his abilities at the NHL level. Canucks Central Roundup. Canucks are at Dallas tomorrow. Their tragic number is sitting at 2. So any combination of the Canucks dropping 2 points or Minnesota gaining 2 points will officially put the E next to the Canucks in the standings and eliminate them from postseason contention. There will be some postseason hockey in the Lower Mainland. Abbotsford Canucks, the baby Canucks, beating the Laval Rocket 4-3 yesterday. 13 straight wins now racked up for the AHL team, and they've locked up home ice advantage for the first round as well. Their final two home games of the regular season coming this weekend against Calgary. Ty Mueller scored twice. At your favorite Abbotsford Canucks player getting on the score sheet, now second amongst Abbotsford players, active Abbotsford players in points this year with 38.
He's graduated from my guy to my boy. So, you know, he just keeps moving up the depth chart.
And pretty soon he will be your son, yes.
If he gets to my son territory, watch out.
Some good news stories there with the Abbotsford Canucks, who, despite all the players that have been graduated up to the big club during this time, they've rattled off 13 consecutive victories. Really tribute to the young guys going on there and the coaching staff and the work they've done as well. Coming up, Joe Beninati is going to join us. Capitals play-by-play. He called number 1 and he called number 895. He'll be there to maybe call 900. He is coming up next on Canuck Central.